Parvati Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam from the 8th canto, chapter 17, entitled The Lord Agrees to Become Aditi's Son, text 27. Tvam adiranta bhuvanasya majam ananta shaktim purusam yamaho Kalo bhavan akshepati sa viswam Shruto yatanta patitam gabiram Tvam, your lordship, Adihi, the original cause, Antaha, the cause of disillusion, Bhuvanasya, of the universe, Madhyam, maintenance of the present manifestation, Ananta Shaktim, the reservoir of unlimited potencies, Purusham, the Supreme Person, Yam, whom? Ahu, they say. Kalaha, the principle of eternal time. Bhavan, your lordship. Aksipati, attracting. Isha, the Supreme Lord. Visvam, the whole universe. Strutaha, waves. Yata, as. Antapatitam, fallen within the water. Gabiram, very deep. Translation. O my Lord, you are the beginning, the manifestation, and the ultimate dissolution of the three worlds, and you're celebrated in the Vedas as the reservoir of unlimited potencies, the Supreme Person. O my Lord, as waves attract branches and leaves that have fallen into deep water, you, the Supreme, eternal time factor, attract everything in this universe. Purport. The time factor is sometimes described as Kalasruta, waves of time. Everything in this material world is within the time factor and is being carried away by the waves of attraction, which represent the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They asked me to also read the next verse because it ends the chapter and there is no purport, so I'll just read it. Tam vai prajanam stira jangamanam prajapatinam asi sambhavisnu divokasam deva divaschutanam parayanam noriva majatupsu. My Lord, you are the eternal. My Lord, you are the original generator of all living entities, stationary or moving, and you're also the generator of the Prajavatis. O my Lord, as a boat is the only hope for a person drowning in the water, you're the only shelter for the demigods who are now bereft of their heavenly position. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 8th canto, 17th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Supreme Lord Agrees to Become Aditi's Son. Om Agyanatimarandasya Ginandana Salakaya Shakshurun Minitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So the Lord is described as Kalastruta, waves of time. So it is very interesting, these waves of time. We see how it is described as the Sat Urmi, or six waves, actually. Everything comes into being, it grows, it flourishes, it gives off some byproducts, it begins to dwindle and ceases to exist. So these are also known as the six transformations, the Sat Avikar. And so the waves of time, they follow a script which is the script of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And all living beings are first too small, and then growing, oh yes, and then rising in power, and then, can't wait to take the wheel. And then, finally, they're there at the peak of their power. And then it's downhill from there on. And the downhill part is long. That part is long. The other parts of flourishing and rising is quick. But the downhill part of aging and losing it is long. It is as if the ball is thrown up, right? Only to be smashed. For a moment, we are rising to glory and fame, and then we are smashed by time. Because time takes everything away, everything. Little by little, we lose it all. First, little things, you know, don't have the same energy levels like you used to have. Or I remember I ate a date, and with the date, I ate my tooth. What to do? That's one less. There still is a gap there. What to do? Time. It didn't digest, but I didn't go to the trouble of having it put back. So, yeah. What to do? Little by little, we lose everything. We lose our strength. And as we understand, Purasamriso, the ability in man is simply a gift of the Supreme Lord. That is all. Just as we write in a book, this book is in the care of, and then we write our name. We don't write, this is my book. No, it's in the care of. And everything is just in the care of. We have a certain amount of intelligence, and it's just put into our care because it will be taken away. Intelligence is defined as including memory, and memory is fading very quickly. So what to do? The influence of time is intrinsic to material life. In this particular chapter, we are looking at Aditi, the mother of the demigods, who is praying. And of course, she is most exalted and very deep in her understanding. She is the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore the Lord agrees to be her mother, or to be her son, sorry, she's the mother. So that is not a small thing. We can just Again and again, the Lord appears in this world. And again, the eternal mother of the Lord is also appearing, expanding herself as the Lord expands himself. The Lord may appear in his Svayamrupa, in his original form. He may appear, also expand in these original forms in Prakash Rupa. He may appear in Vaibhava Rupas, Vaibhava Vilas forms, pastime forms like Lord Balaram. He is the same, but appearing differently for the sake of pastime. He may appear in the form of Tat Ekatma Rupa, in the form of so many various avatars, guna avatars, lila avatars, and so on. He may also appear in his empowered incarnations, empowered jivas, like in his Shakti Avesh forms. So in this way, the Lord is appearing in many, many forms. But to appear, so each time he appears, his mother also expands, and she also takes another form to be his mother, because she's eternally his mother. So in this way, we can appreciate who is speaking. We can appreciate that Aditi is a transcendental personality, and that therefore, the Supreme Lord appears as her son. And of course that son is Vamanadeva, who particularly has one purpose: to restore the order of the universe. Aditi, as the mother of the demigods, is the agent of the Lord. And that is the case. Everything, everyone is an agent of the Lord. Everyone is part of the plan of the Lord. Some understand it and some don't. The demons don't understand that they are actually also agent of the Lord's destructive force and oppressive force. They don't see it, that they're simply an instrument of the Lord. And they are resisting being the instrument of the Lord. Prahlad, what is the best thing you have learned? Devotional service to Vishnu. Vishnu. That coward Vishnu who killed the brother of Hiranyakasipu and who was subsequently hiding in the hearts of people. Just see. So, this personality, Hiranyakasipu, was resisting the Supreme Lord. Bali Maharaj was also a daitya. Bali Maharaj was the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj. But somehow or other, although Hiranyakasipu was a demon, then Prahlad was a devotee, the son of Prahlad, Virochana, was not a devotee. The son was a full-on demon, Virochana. Virochana is mentioned. It is mentioned at one point that Indra and Virochana were sent as representatives, respectively, of the demigods and the demons to meet Lord Brahma, to actually find out what is the real goal of life. And they performed austerity, and Lord Brahma appeared, and Lord Brahma immediately said that the goal of life is simply to enjoy one's senses to the fullest. And Virochana said, I know all this. I mean, you know, I don't need to wait around and hear anything more. I could write a book about it myself, you know. The purpose of life is to enjoy the senses to the fullest. And so Virochana left But Indra was thinking this answer is not really satisfactory. It is incomplete because I have had everything one could imagine to enjoy the senses, and still I'm not satisfied, and still I'm suffering. So how can this be the ultimate goal? No, there must be more. And Indra stayed, and Indra performed more austerities. Then Brahma appeared again, and even then he still tested Indra and made him again perform more austerities. But ultimately, he told him the goal of life, the real goal of life. So, the point which I'm trying to make today is that Samarada Virochana, the son of Prahlad, was not a devotee. Exactly why and how that all happened, I have no information on that. So we have to just take it for what it is. Then Bali Maharaj did not really grow up like a devotee either. Because it is interesting that somehow or other, Sukracharya, who was the spiritual master of Hiranyakasipu, right, the spiritual master of the demons, continued to act as a spiritual master for the next generations as well, and became also the spiritual master of Bali Maharaj. So Sukracharya was also of that view that sense enjoyment was very desirable, and therefore he was attached to his position of comfort, which he got, and therefore he didn't instruct Bali Maharaj properly. So we are now leading up to this particular pastime. And of course, the time factor in this pastime is not so much speaking about aging and about losing one's bodily power and so on, as I mentioned in the beginning. But in this chapter, basically, it means that everyone's control over the material energy will disappear. In the Bhagavatam, in the 11th canto, there is a chapter entitled the Bhumi Gita, the Song of the Earth. And the earth is explaining, so many have tried to possess me, to control me, to lord it over me, and now what remains of all of them? Right? Only names. Only names. So we see that influence of time, which destroys everything, takes everything away. And as that is happening, at first, that is very painful. It is painful to lose one's influence, to lose one's power. It is painful to become old. But there also is an advantage. That is, if one is engaged in devotional service. In material life, there's not much advantage. In material life, one gets some gray hairs, one gets a little experience, and one can say a few wise words as long as it lasts. Before one starts mumbling and, like, you know, go senile. And in India, sometimes they say, he went into samadhi. Anyway, some do go in samadhi, but some also lose it over time. What to do? That is the nature of time. But in spiritual life, it is different. In spiritual life, we are gaining over time. Time means more devotional service, more benefit from devotional service. That is one thing. Also, this dynamic of time, which destroys everything, and that is painful, which makes us lose our influence. At the same time, though, it makes us detached. At first, we try to hold on, but it doesn't work. Then we let go. Then we let go. And then at one point, we give up and say, forget it. I have a story in this regard that once I was in Germany and there was a Sunday program and they had a Russian clown, Russian state circus. And he was before me, before my talk. And what he did was he had balls that he was spinning. And he was spinning them on his fingers, on his toes. He was seated on a stool. And one with a stick on his nose. I mean, not an easy feat, right? I mean, definitely impressive, right? So he got an applause. What it had to do with Krishna consciousness, I have no idea. But anyway, it was part of the Sunday feast. So I sort of start thinking about it and how to sort of give a Krishna conscious twist to the spinning balls, right? So Krishna inspired me. And I was thinking, yes, here is the stream of opportunities. Oh yes, and they come one after another. And when you're young, you take a one, you take a two, you take a three, four, and you spin them everywhere. Cool, very cool. Yeah. And time moves along. And the opportunities keep on coming. And you get a little older, and you play less. You become more purposeful. Here's a good one coming. Got it. Another good one. Take it. It's no longer a game. It's for real. Grab the good opportunities. And time moves along still a little more. And then you can't keep up with all these opportunities that are coming. And you let one go. And then you say, sour grapes. Anyway, it wasn't that good anyway. So in this way, we let go. And in the end, I'm not looking at anyone in particular, but in the end, there are two old men sitting on a bench. I have to illustrate my point. In the end, there are two old men sitting on a bench, and they're looking at the stream of opportunities. And one says to the other, that was a good one. And that's about it. There's no question of trying to catch it. Still seeing it, but no longer possible. It was two. It wasn't three, it was two. He's a spring chicken in the strength of his life. Yes. For as long as it lasts. What to do? Anyway, so yes, this is going on somehow or other, this influence of time. And the influence of time then is taking away our opportunity in this world to be involved in so many things, and one becomes aloof. And this platform of being aloof is very important. In the fourth canto, we see the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj. And I won't get into the early part of the pastime, rather I get into the later part. Although, you know, it's interesting, a little bit about the early part. When Dhruva wanted to climb on the lap of his father, it was not only his stepmother who stopped him, it was also her son, Uttama. Uttama was already sitting on that lap, and Uttama was pushing him down. So Dhruva was not only upset with his stepmother, he was also upset with Uttam. Quite upset. He was angry with both, and that anger was burning. He performed his austerities, he became self-realized and came back totally aloof, and he met his stepmother, who could see that Dhruva harbored no more ill feelings toward her, and she was also amazed, and he offered obeisances to her, and she blessed him and everything. But then we also see that by the arrangement of the Lord, his stepmother is dying somewhere in a forest fire, and then Uttam is being killed by the yakshas, and then Dhruva's anger emerges again, and this time it may be slightly nourished by guilt feeling as well, because he was the one who desired that his brother would be punished, and he feels a little bit responsible. So therefore, to sort of wash off that guilt feeling, he's punishing all these yakshas and he's just killing them like with celestial weapons. So he's killing them by huge numbers and he's about to wipe out all the yakshas. Then it says two elders who are normally completely aloof, these two elders appear, and one is Swayambhuva Manu and the other one is Kuvera. And these two elders, for an exceptional occasion, get involved with things. Otherwise they don't. Otherwise they are detached, they are aloof, and they are absorbed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then they give Dhruva good advice, right? And instruct him to stop all this killing and so on. And it's potent. It's very potent because they are very deep. They're constantly meditating on the Supreme Lord. So this is something that is very valuable. When in one's old age, one has become detached. Or if in one's old age, one has not become detached, then one better becomes detached. Because in that detached stage, one can focus and absorb in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that is not only beneficial for the individual, that's beneficial for society at large. And not only beneficial, it's essential. If we are looking at the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, it's interesting how it developed. Because here was Srila Prabhupada at the very end of his life, very mature, suffering also from old age, and bringing everything, bringing the perfection of spiritual life, bringing the maturity of age and vision, bringing the experience, bringing all these things, right? Here's Srila Prabhupada. And then all his followers, they were like in their 20s, with like an exceptional one in his 30s, right? And he was old, right? And then, okay, by the time Prabhupada left, there were a number in their 30s, but basically a 50-year gap, right? We're looking at a 50-year gap. There was a generation missing. Where were the 50-year-olds to take over? Then they were missing. So the succession was rocking a little bit. It was like there were some waves and a few fell overboard. What to do? That is unfortunate. But one cannot really fall overboard because the mercy of Prabhupada is still with them and cannot go in vain. But the society rocked. Anyhow, and now we're looking at all these at different generations. Now we have kids, we have youth, we have people in the middle phase of life. I'll illustrate that again before I carry on. Sometimes I collect cartoons, and I like cartoons. And one cartoon is a picture, a baby, too young. Next picture, a couple in love, full moon, hand in hand, too much in love. Next, a family, hand, like he's holding a drill, a briefcase, a computer, a phone, she's got shopping bags, he's got a kid here, there, too busy. Next stage, old man, too old. Last stage, cross on the grave, too late. Yeah. So it's like I like that cartoon. Anyhow, the point it makes, right, that yes, in every phase of life, we're missing the boat. But in devotional service, when we have received the mercy of the Parampara and of the pure devotees and of the Supreme Lord, then we have transcendental knowledge. And then, in old age, we can flourish and finally do what we were supposed to do all along. What we read about, what we heard about, what we got so many instructions about, namely, to be Krishna conscious, to actually be absorbed in remembering Krishna. As simple as that. Hearing, chanting, and remembering. Just that. And remembering anyway is old people's business. Right? So remember Krishna. To always remember Krishna. And if there is a class of men that is always and women that is always remembering Krishna and is from that platform contributing to the society, then society is complete. So it looks to me that that is still lacking, that still has not been fully filled in, that generation of elders. Although we have elders and we have good ones, but we need more. We need more grandmothers, we need more elders, we need more wisdom in our society to just cool down the passions of youth, which in some cases can last a long time. No. Sorry, Panch. Had to get him back for that. Yes, so in this way, in some ways, the contribution that the elders can make to the community of Vaishnavas is greatly needed, greatly wanted, and it has to be real. And that is actually the most wonderful thing. Therefore, Vanaprastha is a beautiful thing, right? Because Vanaprastha is basically about panchachordam vanam vrajet. At the age of 50, you can start, sort of. Make a first think about it. Or take some steps to minimize things. But it may only fully set in 60. My doctor says 60 is the youth of old age. So you still have a little youth left, right? And then it matures into 70s. And if you're lucky, are you still there around 80? Do you have any teeth left? Then you can smile. Whatever may be, right? But at that time, right? At that time, we can give very concentrated Krishna consciousness, realized from experience, absorbed, fully absorbed. And everything else is gone. All the temporary things are falling away. And Krishna just stays. And Krishna becomes more and more prominent day by day. And this is the glory of old age. And if that spills into our Vaishnava community, then we have a mature society. And I think we're getting there. We're getting there. We're growing into that. But I would like to see more of that. More of that mature Krishna consciousness in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Thank you very much. If there are any comments, then that would be really nice. Or any questions? Yes. It is said we shouldn't try to imitate Krishna. Imitate Krishna and follow his instructions. What if we try to imitate Arjuna? If we try to imitate Arjuna, right, who has a bow and arrows, we might shoot ourselves in the foot. So be careful, right? Arjun was exceptional. Remember Ekalavya? Remember Ekalavya, who was on his own trying to perfect the way of archery, and who appeared to be even better than Arjun. But therefore his thumb was taken by Dronacharya. Right? Remember Ekalavya. So we are not becoming Ekalavya. No. We cannot imitate Krishna. We only serve Krishna. We cannot imitate Arjuna either. Arjuna is Krishna's eternal associate. We are following in the footsteps. It is not anukar, imitation. It is anusar, to follow. And anusar means to follow in the footsteps. We cannot imitate anyone. We simply have to be ourselves and follow in the footsteps of the previous Vaishnavas. And we should know that every person has unique attributes, unique qualities, and Krishna has a purpose with each one of us. We are an instrument, and each of us has a particular quality, and that will come out over time. So don't try to imitate, be yourself. You are valuable. You are valuable. And you are meant to utilize what you have, everything. What will repression accomplish? We are not going to repress our nature and imitate someone else. Be who you are, but purify. Kavi Karnapur speaks, be natural, but purified nature. Purify it. And then these characteristics that we have become perfect. And how do we purify? By anusar, by following in the footsteps. And even Krishna is acting by example. And there's a chapter 70 in the Krishna book, which is very nice. Krishna's daily activities, and Krishna is giving charity to the brahmanas. Krishna sees different statues of cows and other auspicious things in the morning. So one can follow in the footsteps of Krishna. One can follow in the footsteps of the Vaishnavas.
Because past is there, future is there, but there is probably out is, but there is no deceptive effect of time.
No. When the Saiksata, right? When the Supreme Lord glances upon Pradhana, and when he glances upon Pradhana, then Lord Shambhu becomes the glance, and then the Pradhana becomes activated and becomes Mahatattva, and the three modes of material nature become manifest. And the living being gets the opportunity to express the mode of passion. Every living being in the universe is tinged with passion. So it is that passion, in response to that passion, that the influence of time is immediately manifest. Because passion is causing distress, therefore it is cut down. So we see how time is manifest at that time. And that's all I know. Now, because that's what Bhagavatam describes. Now, there may be something more if you study many Puranas. But then again, it is not recommended to do that. It is not recommended to study many scriptures so that we can make a display of scholarship. Rather, it is recommended to go deep with the Bhagavatam. So, let us just settle for whatever the Bhagavatam tells us. Yes.
Go.
I agree with
Brahmins a little more clarity on his final question. His benignity, of course, is eternal. And so if eternity is there, then there is no conception of time.
Oh, yeah.
However, when we come into this material world, you describe the transformations that the living entity has to go through in these material bodies, even though they remain eternal. And because these changes take place, that means that everything in this material world is temporary, and therefore these transformations that take place is the representation of the time factor.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Oh, very nice, thank you. Yeah, okay, yes. Yeah, why should everyone just accept all these far-out stories from the Bhagavatam? It's true that some are difficult to understand. Priyavrata didn't like it, that it was getting dark at night, got himself a chariot, followed the sun, and it was sunny all the time. I mean, it sounds like mythology, right? The wheels of his chariot cut the landmass into seven pieces, and so we got the seven continents. I mean, it sounds as mythological as one could imagine. Some, therefore, have offered that the Bhagavatam has a mythological side and a philosophical side, right? But Prabhupada was not in that mood. Prabhupada would take the Bhagavatam very literal and very direct. Now, Srila Prabhupada was not so much a bridge preacher. Srila Prabhupada was not one who was beating around the bush and who was very, very careful. Can the people actually accept this? Are they ready for it? Or should we package it a little bit more soft, you know, some cushions around it so they can possibly take it? No, Prabhupada would just speak very much from a transcendental platform and say things that went against current norms, like 1, 2, 3, 4, what are we fighting for? Not going to Vietnam. And Prabhupada said, but Arjuna had to go to war to people who didn't want to go to war. It was like hot to speak like that. In Chicago, he speaks out against feminism. I mean, sensitive, very sensitive stuff. But he was oblivious to these things. Having the faith that transcendental knowledge will act. And that is the point. It's like, it's not about what are we going to say that is going to convince these people. Prabhupada on board of the Jaladutta in Markina Bhagavad Dharma writes, what can I say to these people? They're completely steeped in all the sinful activities of Kali. What can I say to convince them? I cannot think of anything. All I can do is repeat your words. And then he starts Evam Pravasana Manaso and then quote Bhagavatam verses. Right. So I think ultimately, not that we cannot employ some strategy, you know, as you're a book distributor, you told me So as a book distributor, all right, you try to present it a little favorable so that someone can accept the book. But at one point, we just have faith that Bhagavatam will act, that the holy name will act, transcendental knowledge will act. So little bridging is all right. But if bridge preaching becomes the norm, then we have a risk that we lose our integrity. And so ultimately, our integrity is the Bhagavatam. It is simply the Bhagavatam. And when Vyasadeva was trying to do some bridge preaching and wrote all these various Vedic literatures and so on, but had not written the Bhagavatam, he was despondent. So in this way, I would say, we should not be too afraid that people will not take it. People will take it. The Bhagavatam itself is convincing, is penetrating. And even, some of these stories may sound far out, but then seeing the pure devotee behind the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada, it's like I bought into it, and they didn't go to the moon. Okay then. Although I was there in front of the TV, right? We saw it, We saw it, and it was a big thing. And the whole world was together. The whole world, It overcame everything. The Russians, the Chinese, everyone was part of it. They're all watching. They're always sharing the monitoring of the space shuttle. It was a big thing. Man on the moon. Neil Armstrong. It's all a hoax. Well, Prabhupada, if you say so, then must be true. And why do you say so, Srila Prabhupada? Simply because in the Bhagavatam it says the moon is further away than the sun. Finished. That settles it. That was the only reason. That was it. And that's outrageous, isn't it? That's outrageous to say that in this world. Outrageous.
It was around May of 1975 when Prabhupada was doing the translation of the fifth canto. So every day when he walks, he questioned his disciples. But one morning, it was 5 a.m, he rang his bell, I went into the room, this was I think in Sydney, and he said, "Call Paramahamsa." So that was my... So then we both, he had me call Paramahamsa, so we both went into the room. It was Prabhupada had just been translating that verse, and he came in and offered obeisances, and he just looked at us, total conviction, and said, "Now I know they never went to the moon." He said, "It's not possible." He said, "Because the moon is further away from the sun." But when he read that in the Bhagavatam, that was it. And I had been with him 2 years, but that was the first time he had really said something that was just, you just knew everything in there. That's why he didn't see allegory. You accept everything 100%. And that's how he did what he did. Complete faith.
Thank you so much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.